You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, in for Tanzina Vega. And rural hospitals are in crisis. Since 2010, 138 hospitals in rural communities have closed. And though they've been struggling financially for years, the COVID-19 pandemic pushed them to the brink, a record 19 facilities closing in the last year. But changes may be coming to rural hospitals thanks to a measure passed in Congress late last year. For more on the challenges rural hospitals are facing, we are joined now by Brock Slaybaugh, who is Chief Operating Officer of the National Rural Health Association. Brock, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. It's great to be here.
So maybe you can start by just describing what the definition of rural is. Well, you know, who lives there and how many folks?
Rural is a difficult definition because it includes everybody that lives outside of a metropolitan statistical area. It is about 20% of the population in the United States, yet we compose about 80% of the landmass. So this creates part of the dilemmas in terms of low volumes and large distances that exist between the populations that are served by many of our rural facilities.
And is that sort of distinction between large areas of land that you're serving, but relatively small dispersed populations, is that the main challenge rural hospitals are facing, or what are some of the others?
We're looking at issues that go beyond just those matters of geography. So first is lower rates of insurance coverage. We have some workforce challenges that create less access to primary care and mental health services. And then when we look at data from the CDC and other agencies, there's higher rates of premature death and disease. And so in addition to some of these challenges that we have in geography, many of this is also related to reimbursement, which then drives these factors in a negative direction.
Talk to me about staffing challenges from the staff that is maybe janitorial all the way up to surgeons.
Yeah, it's a real critical problem right now. I've traveled through Kansas and Nebraska last week, and the vacancies that exist within rural hospitals and clinics is tremendous. And you're right, it's gone all the way from that whole range of employee. The pandemic has certainly stretched a lot of the resources pretty thin. Many people experiencing burnout and other results of just hard work and long hours and a lot of emotionally exhausting care that's been provided. And so it is in a crisis now in terms of the workforce. I was in one rural hospital in Nebraska, and they had like six or seven different vacancies all the way in terms of leadership to the positions that you described in terms of those taking care of patients at the bedside.
So more than 130 rural hospitals in the last two decades closing. What is the impact on the communities that were once served by those hospitals?
Well, yes, Melissa, there's 138 actually hospitals closed since 2010. This is resulting in the loss of two important factors for rural communities. The first is access to care. And of course, that's obvious when you don't have a physician or an advanced practice provider or somebody local to take care of you, the distances then become formidable. And then the second issue is, and almost as important, is the loss of economic vitality. In a rural community, a rural hospital and its related clinics and healthcare resources compose about 20% of the economy. That's $1 in $5. And that certainly does not help to fortify the economic vitality of a rural area. So we see this in both two ways, access and economic development. We've seen the widening health disparities that existed before the pandemic. So we had various factors like aging population, chronic disease, with providers that are less available than in our urban communities. And so what we saw with COVID was just the widening of these disparities, these fractures that have long existed in our communities. It has really, I think, emerged. The virus was beautifully positioned to exploit every weakness that a rural community had. It has resulted in higher rates of death and disease, comorbidities that have resulted from that. So it's been an exhausting 15 months or so during this time. And I'm afraid to say we're not over it yet because there's many rural communities around the country that are experiencing increases in the rates of COVID spread.
So what kind of federal relief did rural hospitals receive during this sort of perfect storm moment?
I'm pleased to say that through the CARES Act, we had significant funding streams that were provided to rural hospitals, clinics, and other providers. And then we had the American Rescue Plan that was passed in April of this year, and another round of funding that was released to go to rural hospitals. In fact, $8.5 billion for rural hospitals. What we're seeing is that this has been important in terms of the resources provided to them for caring for the patients that they serve. However, once this funding stream is exhausted, we're going to be seeing, I think, the return of hospital closures. And we've estimated about 453 rural hospitals are at risk of or vulnerable to closure.
So when you talk about that kind of long-term perspective, what are some of the systemic level changes that need to happen to address the challenges facing rural hospitals?
When we see the systemic issues going back all the way to 1983, when the prospective payment system was passed and put into effect, it really was a program of reimbursement for hospitals that was never tested nor demonstrated to work in rural communities in terms of low volume facilities. And so we've been behind the eight ball for all of these years, working to create equity within these geographies of providers that have been really harmed through these payment programs. And so we need to see two things, I think, going forward: stopping the bleeding, really getting the substance of reimbursement that's going to be helpful to facilities in terms of their operations. And then secondly, we need to tend to innovation. We know going forward that the current state of fee-for-service provision of services is not going to be effective. And we're going to have to look for alternative methods that are rural-centric to be able to care for populations that have higher risk of comorbidities, all the way from chronic disease to maternal mortality and morbidity and everything in between.
Is telemedicine one of those?
Telemedicine is certainly a solution, although we view this as a complementary service rather than a substitutionary. And so we've seen a huge increase in the number of services provided through telemedicine. Before the pandemic, less than 1% of all claims submitted for outpatient ambulatory services were done by telemedicine. We're now at about 11, 12, 13%, which is an incredibly huge increase when you look at the disruption that technology has created. Again, though, I caution that there's nothing that will substitute for good, solid primary care that's delivered to patients in both physical form and through telehealth.
Brock Slabaugh is the Senior Vice President for Member Services at the National Rural Health Association. Thank you for joining me, Brock.
You're welcome. Thank you, Melissa.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.